Voltaire likened life to a game of cards. Each player must accept the cards that life deals him or her. But once in hand, he or she alone must decide how to play the cards in order to win the game. The writer John Erskine put it a little differently when he wrote, "Though we sometimes speak of a primrose path, we all know that a bad life is just as difficult, just as full of work, obstacles, and hardships as a good one. The only choice is the kind of life one would care to spend one's efforts on. Whether you're a bum on Skid Row or a high achiever, or a happy individual, you can pat yourself on the back, taking the credit or the blame for your place. We took over from our parents at a much younger age than we thought, and we've been in the driver's seat ever since. You know, I didn't realize until I was about 30 that I'm behind the wheel in my life. I thought it was my genes, my horoscope, and my childhood. I should have taken a hint from my daughter when she was only 11 months old. I was a headstrong Navy fighter pilot. Used to wear my silver blue flight suit to mow the lawn so the neighbors would know that a Rambo type was living next door. I used to go out in the freeway in my Porsche Targa looking for Honda Civics to intimidate. I wore my flight helmet with a bolt of lightning painted on it in the car on the freeway, and I'd love to ride the bumper of the car in front of me, pretending I was a blue angel flying formation in an air show. I'll never forget that evening when I swaggered into my kitchen in full flight gear to greet my wife and kids, who I thought would be impressed seeing their warrior in his War Games uniform. I always wore a gun in my holster with my flight suit, in case I was shot down in a real war and taken prisoner. I figured I'd shoot my way out to freedom. Well, I'm sure you get the picture of a former chauvinist who believed that he was the boss of the house. But then I've always learned the hard way. My 11-month-old younger daughter Dana was in her high chair, supposedly eating Gerber's strained squash as the main course. Instead, the squash was in my wife's hair, all over my daughter's bib, and all over the floor. "What's going on in here?" I growled, putting my flight helmet on the table. "It looks like the Vietnam War in here." My wife smiled and said, "She doesn't like Gerber's strained squash, so I'm giving her applesauce for nourishment." I couldn't believe she said that. "Give me that squash," I said. "She eats what we give her. I was raised during the post-depression years, and we were taught to clean our plate. She eats what we give her. Besides, she doesn't have taste buds yet." I took the squash, telling my wife that I'd take charge and get this simple exercise over with. I told my daughter to open up. Her gums clamped shut. I ate several bites as a role model and made slurping approving noises. I nearly gagged. It wasn't that great tasting, but I didn't let on. I told my daughter, "It's delicious. Daddy loves it." Her defiant look said it all. It was that "go ahead, fatso, you finish it" look. Well, I'd had about enough. I asked my wife to leave the room. And being in total control of the situation, I pressed her cheeks firmly together with my two fingers and I forced her mouth open. I laughed at my own take-command success. I then neatly inserted several spoonsful of squash into her mouth and I held it shut like every good father would do. "Go ahead and swallow it," I ordered. "I'm holding on until you do." She made a decision at 11 months old. She decided to die by holding her breath rather than swallow. I totally lost control and exploded. "Go ahead and die. You're not the only child. Before you die, you'll swallow." And I glared back at her, pinching her mouth shut even more firmly. She made a second decision. She decided to make a squash transfer. As I squeezed tightly, I could feel the pressure build up in her cheeks like Mount St. Helens. I had created the nozzle effect, and like linear acceleration, a steady stream of propelled squash came out the compressed opening in her mouth and up my nose, deep into my nasal pituitary area. And I stopped breathing. I bellowed like a bull and fell convulsing on the floor, in my flight suit. My wife, hearing the commotion, tiptoed back in and smiled sweetly. "What happened, Top Gun?" she said. I said, "Nothing. She doesn't like strained squash. Don't make a big deal about it." You see, my daughter had decided very early in life that she didn't like squash and wouldn't eat it. She's grown up now and flown the nest, but to this day, she doesn't like the taste of any kind of squash. But then, that's her choice, isn't it? You know, many children learn how to control their parents' lives as well, long before they learn how to talk in complete sentences. If whining gets attention and goodies, the whining continues. Children always do that for which they're rewarded. I saw a 5-year-old boy terrorist on a recent flight. He wouldn't sit down in his seat with his seatbelt fastened until his mother and his father gave him their 2 pieces of chocolate cake for dessert, too. But you and I are not victims of the winds of fate. We are steering our ships. We are not puppets dangling from the strings of our heredity and environment. I know many individuals who have to work late all the time, as if the company or their bosses made them. You and I decide to work late sometimes because there are important things we want to get done. People who have to do things usually resent doing them, or they're not happy doing them, and they're not effective performers or producers. If you feel you have to do anything in life, in that sense, you're irresponsible in that act. Responsible self-control is the path to mental health and frequently to physical health as well.